Hey there, Shopomaniacs! You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, your favorite web design podcast. I'm Dave Rupert. Hi, Chris. And
hey!
Chris. There's also Chris.
I'm here, too. Chris, I promised you last week that Dave and I would be doing another one, just us. And next week, fingers crossed, we'll have a guest again and talk about some special topics there. But so it'll be Q&A again. I know last week our plan was Q&A, and then we ended up talking about browsers for like 40 minutes.
Yeah, we did answer one question. So
we did. We got one question.
It officially qualifies.
Mr. Dave, let's flip that on its head this time, and you know, we won't be firing off our fake shotgun sound, but let's try to get through as many as we can. How about that? The question still to this day, the number one question we get asked on Shop Talk Show is, what do I learn next? Of course, people just can't get it off their mind. They want to know. They want to be told what to learn. This one isn't totally different than that, but I like that he's got a goal. So Chris Finney writes in saying, HTML, CSS, jQuery. That's his skill set now. He works for somewhere where I feel like that's kind of all he needs, but he's reached like a ceiling of how useful he feels. And he has a very specific goal, and it's just to be more employable, to find a new job. Maybe that's better, or he feels is more modern. He's looking at stuff because he doesn't have any of these skills yet. SAS, Gulp, Git, ES6, Vue. He hears these things but doesn't know any of them yet. And I would agree, Chris, if you knew all of those things or some of them or whatever, it probably would make you more employable. You'll get past those early interviews easier. And along we've said on Shop Talk Show, you know, just build websites. That's how you're going to, you know, that's what's important in this world anyway, is that you're actually executing and building websites. And usually you learn those things along the way. That's the point of our just build websites thing here. But it's like, it sounds like if you're just constantly working and you're using the same, you're never asked to use any of these other skills, that it's not really working for you. So, Dave, how do you like force yourself to get more employable?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I was going to say is I definitely feel this, Chris, and I feel that like this is just a normal, or I wish it wasn't the normal. I wish we were all on like we had infinite time to learn everything. But I, you know, if you work at a WordPress shop or something, you get really good at making WordPress stuff, you know. But then you like you have your head down for 6, 8, 9, 10 months, and then you like look up and you're like, what am I reading on Twitter? I don't even understand any of the words. Like, I'm good at this job, but I don't understand these words. It's two questions. Like, what do I learn? And then how do I make time, kind of, right? Like, if you have a job, you have to like borrow time from other places. So, I think there's ways to work it out within your company. Be like, hey, I need time to kind of brush up on my skill set. I think any company would want to invest in that, hopefully. But if that's not the case, then you
can. I like that. Right? Ask your company if you can level up because you think it might level them up as well. Maybe you could make the case for that. I don't disagree that learning kind of newer technologies is going to make you more employable. So yeah, like Dave is probably headed towards, is if you're after hours stuff, if you really do need to force yourself into this thing, give yourself some table stakes. That's one of my classic talking points, you know, like tell somebody you're going to build this thing or promise that you're going to build something to them, and maybe pick technologies on purpose that you're going to use. And in this particular case, who cares if they're the right technologies exactly perfectly for the job? You're doing this on purpose to learn them. So you can do whatever you want. Build the dang thing in Vue because you're going to build it in Vue because you're going to learn Vue, you know, and hopefully the stakes are low enough that it's not, you know, tremendously a disaster if you maybe pick the wrong technology for the job or whatever. But, you know, if it's a website, Vue's probably got the tools that you need to build it. If it's more static, then go of kind of a Vue Press or a Nuxt kind of way. And if it's more dynamic, then just straight Vue is probably fine. And just get your way through it with Vue. All of a sudden, you're a Vue developer now, and maybe you've increased your prospects a bit. So good luck, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, if you're coming from HTML, CSS, jQuery, the first thing I would maybe try to bite off is like wrapping your head around ES6 and kind of like what that is, because I think it gets tied up into all these modern frameworks and React, but But if you really understand, like, it's just some new methods in JavaScript that make it a little bit easier and more concise to write applications or any kind of logic in JavaScript. I would recommend like learning that. I think the canonical resource here is maybe Wes Boss's ESX course. It's really awesome. I took it even though I like knew ESX, but I just was like, you know, I've had no one has ever like given me the full picture. Like no one has sat me down and been like, okay, here's actually, here's everything in it. You know, I needed that. I
still could use that. I write it all the time too, but haven't taken this particular course. I've taken other West courses, but yeah, it is nice to get the full picture of things like you're saying. I feel like I just know what I mean, it's only been in the last like 3 months where I've had any confidence at all in like being able to even like look at a map function, like quickly grok it and be like, oh, I know what map does. I know what reduce does. I know what,
yeah.
I understand how this arrow function is structured and that there's an implicit return or a not implicit return, or there's one param, so it's not in parentheses, but there's two params, so they need to be in parentheses, and just all that little crap that you feel like you see and you can generally reason your way about, but to feel like confident and fast in it is a totally different.
Yeah, for me, it just felt like a, hey, here's what's new. Like, here's what's new. Check it out. If you don't understand it, that's fine. Like, knowing it exists helps. And then, but there may be things you're like, oh, I can instantly use that now. But the big thing about ES6 is like a lot of it does replace jQuery like entirely. So you might find like, hey, I can just write ES6 and not use jQuery. And now I've saved every, you know, client like 30 kilobytes and, or every website I build now has 30 less kilobytes and 100 less kilobytes of JavaScript to execute. Like that's a big difference for you.
And then just replace it with Vue.
And then, yeah, well, and that's what the other, I mean, I'm specifically saying like HTML, CSS and jQuery, like going to Vue, and now you're into, you just, whatever. you put a poster of Sarah Drasner on your wall and light a candle and just like read CSS tricks and learn Vue from Sarah Drasner. I think that's the best way to do that. And you'll instantly see like places where like, oh yeah, jQuery was actually kind of weird. Like, you know, if you've ever had to like inject HTML with jQuery, it feels clumsy and it always breaks or like,
there you go. It's gotten smart, a little easier, right? With template literals, but then whatever, you know, it's still not.
Yeah. You never do it smart, right? Like it doesn't feel smart. It feels like I'm hacking this to bits. And so Vue is like, oh, you like to inject HTML with jQuery? Well, this is Vue's bread and butter. So Vue would be a great place to step in.
Yeah. We have a great article coming. Sarah Drasner also has one, a jQuery to Vue one. And there's a new one coming out on CSS Tricks that makes this point really nicely. I think you'd be surprised. I was surprised at how so much translates between the two, because I feel like at surface level, they feel like really different. But the fact that, and you can go back and listen to the Evan episode of this show that talks about this, but it was designed in that way to be able to be kind of sprinkled in to existing websites nicely. And Vue does that. It's probably the best at that, you know, get the modern stuff, but also have it be sprinkleable a little easier. Anyway, we should move on. Do lots of questions, right? Speaking of JavaScript stuff, Shane O'Sullivan writes in, there's been, you know, some kind of Webpack versus Parcel drama. I'm not even privy to that drama, but they're both bundlers. Have you seen Parcel? We all know what Webpack is, right? What's Parcel?
So Parcel is a packer. So it'll, you know, but what's different about it is you point it to your index.html. You say, hey, go to localhost 3000/index.html, and then just crawl my site and make bundles. So it's like, okay, cool. I'll just go through. Okay, this page has, it has these five JavaScript files. Great. I'll put these guys into one big bundle. Okay, let me go to the about page. Oh, that has the seven JavaScript files, but okay. And like, it just, it does like what Webpack does, but it kind of crawls through your site to kind of build it, or through, you can point it to a JavaScript file and it'll just read your imports and build a bundle based on the imports.
Yeah. So it's like, it's happy to take kind of anything as an entry point. And then it just starts crawling from there and making your bundle. So when it says zero config, there literally may not even be a config file at all.
Yeah. Like, you know, with Webpack, it's like you have to set a entry and a destination and kind of like grunt, you know, you kind of build out these endpoints and outpoints, and then you have to add what transforms you're going to run it through and all these steps, you know, you kind of like inject all that stuff, but the babble, the everything. Parcel's like, yeah, we have all that pre-built. Like it's all, we'll detect what you're doing and spit it out. So
we'll see if it actually becomes a true, like, I feel like if you're doing some, any kind of fancy build process stuff, that Webpack is way more mature and probably way more powerful and capable than Parcel. And it's probably not a world in which you're just like looking at just swapping out your Webpack for Parcel. Like it's just, you're probably not going to do that. But for like a lot of like, certainly for simple sites and new sites and stuff like that, Parcel just really look compelling to me for that reason, where you just kind of like, just set it loose and like, I don't know, do smart stuff, make a nice bundle for me. And it just kind of does. It feels like an evolution of like grunt, like gulp felt like kind of an evolution from grunt kind of thing. And
yeah, like, I feel like, I mean, this is me. I'm realizing I don't like the configuration stuff. Like I would much rather like hit a button or type one command and it just runs.
Well, see, remember there was like evolutions from Gulp, though, there were some of them are like, we can look at Gulp users. They're all using it to process their SAS. They're all using it to inject partials. They're all using it to minimize their assets. So let's make a Gulp competitor that, you know, does all those things automatically. And I feel like those didn't catch on, though. So that's when I look at this, I wonder if this like making choices for you thing will catch on in the same is worrisome in that way, that it does too much without config, that it's, you know, people prefer the config, but you're straight up saying I you don't like the config.
Yeah, I don't like configs. I just I don't know. I think it's too much mental overhead for anyone just hopping into a project to be like, okay, what the hell happened here? You know, like, but that the problem is like, everything already kind of is built with Webpack. Create React app, Vue, Angular, ng serve or whatever, it runs it through Webpack, and that's cool, yeah, and it Webpack works, and you know it, but like, you know, so am I switching my Vue projects over to Parcel? No, because like I don't like, I'm like, I don't even know how to set it up quite
well,
yet.
Apparently, I mean, the docs aren't quite there for Parcel yet too. You might get to a page that's like, I don't know. It's like, or the page might even just say like, docs coming soon, maybe.
Yeah. For JavaScript I write, I think it works out great. Like, you know, it's like go audit these three files and build some bundles or whatever. I think that's great.
It's kind of like your HTML is your documentation in a way, you know, by virtue of linking up a script, you're saying, please make this script into a bundle for me, please.
Yeah. So I'm very, I like it. The like experiments I've done with just like hand coded stuff, you know, but getting into frameworks, I, you know, they already have Webpack, but you know, would I like to be using Parcel? I definitely would.
There is some buy-in. Like, let's say you really want to use CoffeeScript. Plenty of users of CoffeeScript still. Then in your index.html, you write script source equals index.coffee right in the HTML, which feels weird to me because it's like, that's Parcel buy-in then. That's not valid code anywhere. That'll never work ever. So, but what you've written configuration then. You're saying, please process the CoffeeScript first and then process both this HTML and the CoffeeScript and give me some kind of final output that does it in a way. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, but would it be better if you could just be like, go to this index.html, find all the CoffeeScript files, autocomplete, you know, like I don't know how far Parcel takes it, but that would be cool, you know. Anyway.
It even does it's like with that with SCSS too. You pay link rel, you know, style sheet style.scss, and it's like, oh, I know what you mean. You want me to process this first before you do it. Anyway, yeah, we can move on.
Well, but we are talking about like the CSS and PHP thing last episode. What if Parcel could do this for you? What if it's like, oh, you have these, you know, I see these five link tags because they're in these five components. Like, I'll just build these link tags for you, or like, I'll just build a bundle for you based on these link tags and then audit, like, edit your HTML. It's a little different because this is like for JavaScript templates, not, you know, like the output from Parcel as it compiles something, you know, like builds a build folder, you know, or dist folder. So anyway, I don't know. I'm reading a Vue Parcel JS thing, and it looks pretty simple, but you still have other.
Seems good. I hope they, you know, I hope they have like a guiding vision, which I'm sure they do, and that they really stick with it. You know, if the goal here is like zero config forever, like, I wonder how long you can hold on to that. You know,
yeah, I wonder. So, and does it just run? Does it run? You know, I don't know how it all works. So, anyway.
We've talked a lot about Netlify Build before, the Git's workflow for web development, where you can build, deploy, and manage modern web projects super easily with Netlify. They just launched something new they're calling Netlify Dev, where you can run their entire platform right on your laptop, or your desktop, I suppose, too. You can preview it all, site generation, functions, and edge logic. So imagine the productivity boost of being able to locally test your site generator, API integrations, serverless functions, and edge rules all in a single development server. That's Netlify Dev. A powerful way to build and test modern web apps on your local machine. With one simple command, you can install Netlify Dev to use on any project. That'll spawn a fully local environment of Netlify Dev that automatically detects and runs your site generator, makes environment variables available, performs edge logic and routing rules, and compiles and runs cloud functions. The extra bonus is that you can even stream that live, so Netlify Dev takes hot reloading to a whole new level, allowing you to actually stream your dev server to a live URL, which is great for collaborative development. You can now share your work as you work and get instant feedback. So I could be working on my site, I could have it open in a browser, open on my phone, see the changes live as they're happening, but you could also have it wherever you are in the world, open on your browser or on your phone, and whenever I update something, the site will update and you'd be able to see it. Netlify Dev automatically detects common tools like Gatsby, Hugo, Jekyll, React Static, 11D, and more, providing a zero config setup for your local dev server. Netlify has faithfully replicated their powerful Edge Logic engine in WebAssembly so you can locally test all the same rules before deploying them to their global infrastructure. You can write cloud functions in modern JavaScript, adding needed dependencies. Netlify will compile your functions as AWS Lambdas and deploy them as full API endpoints. Local testing works too. It all comes with Netlify Live, a hosted service that continually runs your dev command, just like you do locally, watching for changes. The result is an instant preview you can share with your entire team with live updates as code and content changes. Like I said at the beginning, Netlify Dev installs with the Netlify CLI, create new sites, set up continuous deployment, and push new deploys right from the command line. And Netlify Dev is just the beginning. Take your local development to Netlify Build, power collaboration through Netlify's Git-based workflow with deploy previews, branch testing, and more. So check out Netlify Dev at netlify.com. And our thanks to Netlify for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Hey, Dave, George Foster wrote in, and he's kind of been on a Windows machine forever, has a Windows machine now, and he's just kind of like getting more into the, you know, web dev stuff, and I think feels some kind of pressure, or maybe it would be a smart move for him to get a MacBook. But like, what do you think? Should George just hang it out on Windows? Like, why do you think he's feeling that pressure? How's it still going for you?
Windows is fine. Done. Next. So Windows
don't
10
switch,
is,
George. Forget everybody. Like it'd be interesting to get a little more information for you about why you feel, if you feel pressure or why or whatever. But these days,
Windows 10 is good.
Just look at Dave.
Like I use it all the time. I think even, you know, every month or so, you know, more people kind of switch over. You know, Windows, I think we all know, has its quirks. But you know, there are also quirks in Mac land. So, you know, and if you like a working keyboard, I really recommend Windows products. So, hey, next, Chris.
Yeah, Don McKinnon here is he's looking to build out some projects with server-side rendering, you know, like we used to do, but he's doing it in React with Next.js. So Next.js is kind of a React framework that I'm familiar with it now. All of a sudden, we just had Guillermo on the show. That was helpful. But we're I'm working, you know, with our little community JavaScript meetup, we've decided to build a website too, and we're building it in Next.js. So I've had a little bit of hands-on experience with it. It's pretty neat. Has a nice little dev server and stuff for working on it. But then you can run like Next build, Next export, and it'll make a straight up static version, you know, just like you would get with, you know, whatever, like Qgo or 11D or something, like a static build of your site that doesn't need JavaScript to run, which is neat. Anyway, so he's building in Next.js. And in the past, he's written CSS with Sass and Sass partials and stuff, pre-compiled the thing, you know, made a big old giant style.css file, threw it on a CDN, you know, minified it, cached it with HTTP headers, you know, just kind of classic best practices for CSS, and then built the site with that. So like, just because you're using React and Next and fairly new things doesn't mean you can't just write CSS the good old-fashioned way. And in fact, that's what Don is doing here. But then he's saying he's learning about style components, basically, and how popular that is in the React world. So Don says, given how I'm already caching the CSS and all that, let's say I switch to style components. Would it be like, what do I get out of that? Is it going to be faster still, or not faster or slower? Like, what's the performance story there? Like, I don't know.
I think the important distinction is caching is second load only, right? Like and if you wanted to even be super fast, you could write a service worker and intercept the request for a CSS file and you know, run it back before the, you know, even the fetch thing is like, oh, I already actually have that file, you know, like you could be fast like with a service worker, and it's already apparently it's already like processed in bytecode and stuff when it's cached. Anyway, that's a cool thing I learned recently. But the where stylized components comes in and why it's kind of says like, oh, it's fast is, you know, if your CSS is bundled to the component only ever serves the CSS it needs. So you never have more.
There is no link style sheet on your page anymore at all. So you're going to gain some speed immediately for that. There is no render blocking.
No blocking style sheet.
Not one at all. Assuming you go all in on the thing. So there's that, but then where do you pay for that? Well, you pay for it in your bundle size. There's more JavaScript to be parsed then. So like, I don't know if there's a great apples to apples, you know, comparison of this. Like I built the site two ways and which one is faster kind of thing. It would be interesting to see.
The high road or the low road, which one, you know, is, I mean, it's, yeah, or left one or right one, you know, you don't, it doesn't, you know, I think there's trade-offs. I mean, you are putting more strings into the JavaScript. We do know like JavaScript size and execution on limited CPU devices is more intensive. So you're causing more work for the little, you know, crappy or smartphone.
Right.
I guess I shouldn't say crappy because it's like, if that's what people can buy, that's what people can buy. So like
this usually isn't the story though. It's usually not like, I'm glad we're talking about performance now, but usually people don't make this choice because of the perf choice. They pick style components or whatever because they like writing their styles in JavaScript because they're just more comfortable there anyway, or they like the hot modular reloading they get from it. It's just a little easier to implement, or they do it because, it scopes the styles to the component so perfectly such that, you know, if you don't use that component, the styles aren't loaded or whatever. There's all these other reasons that are usually quoted more so than the perf story.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I think it's one of those, like, I think it's a feature. And if you worked really hard, you could leverage it to be very fast, especially if you like server-side rendered your Next app. Or Next app or whatever.
I wonder if style components plays nicely with Next. It may not.
And I would have to look at how to, like, do you have a bunch of micro pauses when the browser hits that style block? Does it go, oh crap, there's a style block. I have to now recalculate and do a recalc, paint, re-render, you know, like, so rather than one, like, calculate, you've now introduced like 20 calculate steps, and that's expensive for a browser, right? So that's why like animations without the calculate property are faster, right? So So I'm going to put on my skeptic hat. I think there's going to be micro penalties that may add up to a significant kind of penalty on the client. But that said, like, it's not the end of the world to me if it spits out a style tag.
Like, well, that's still like JavaScript is making that style tag. What's kind of neat is when these apps, you know, I've been kind of a proponent of CSS modules lately, which is old. You know, I was looking at the repo just today. I'm like, has there been no commits to this in 2 years? Is that the case? That's crazy. I think I'm wrong. I'm like looking at the wrong repo or something, but like, this is not new, the CSS module stuff. But what's kind of nice about it is that you work in just regular CSS files and the output is just CSS files also. So like, you're not increasing your bundle size. It has nothing to do with your bundle size. Or I may a little, and because of class names and whatnot, but like, that's kind of neat. Right. If you're getting what you like out of CSS and JS, like all the scoping and the hot modular reloading or whatever it is that you're really looking for, and you're paying no bundle size penalty for it because it's just a link rel style sheet, like it would be if you're working in SAS or whatever else. And if you really like SAS, CSS modules support SAS too, so you're happy there. I just feel like you get a lot of the benefit without having to talk about this like bundle size problem and the it's just kind of a cool middle ground.
I would love to see the like minimum viable CSS modules tutorial, you know, just like the hey,
the problem with that is when you look at that, it's like it's like, okay, it generates this object of class names from the style sheet. So if you wrote, Dave, if you wrote my dot post class, it'll read your style sheet and it'll turn dot post into dot post gibberish stuff. And then it expects you to just use that object key where you want the styles to be injected in your template. So there's no real good helper for that. Like if you're just writing like a standard web component template or something, you got to like string concatenate the class together. And it doesn't look that nice. When you look at it in a React app, it looks really nice. Class name just becomes a thing that's just like, I don't know, put the class name here. Styles.post.
Yeah, styles.post. And then
it looks cleaner. It looks nice in React, I hate to admit. But I'm sure there's a Vue story for it. But maybe there isn't, because Vue's already got a nice styling story.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Come over to the Vue side, Chris. Wave your hands.
I wish I had a Vue project. I've never done a Vue project. Makes me sad a little bit.
Oh, man. All right. Chop Talk Show V5 or whatever. We'll go all in on Vue.
Maybe we should. That would be kind of rad. Wow. Yeah. Like a Nuxt view. Oh, I'm not opposed to that.
All right. We got Zemina Villa writes in, we work a lot with WordPress, but we either buy themes or create custom themes and modify them. So when it gets to finishing a site as it was designed, there's a lot of additional CSS added. I'm no expert in this, but it seems messy to me. There are always specificity issues and I hate having to use important too many times. Do you have any tips on how to work with WordPress and modifying themes without committing so many CSS crimes? I love CSS crimes and that should be a TV show. So
doing CSS crimes. Yeah. You buy a theme off ThemeForest or whatever, and you slap it up because it's close enough for a client, but you got to change some colors and some images or whatever.
My borders to be rounded. 3 pixels.
Yeah, but I kind of get it. It's like it's easier to just pop into the bottom of their style sheet and do a couple of overrides regardless of it than it is to like re-architect all their CSS to be how you would do it. Like, I feel like maybe a couple of CSS crimes is like the lowest technical overhead you can do.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to write all the CSS and yourself, or do you, you know, you're choosing a shortcut kind of, but the unfortunate file of output is you have the CSS crimes file right at the bottom. So, what do you do?
CSScrimes.css is awesome. You know.
Yeah, crimes.css is so good. the spinoff podcast material here. This was something that came up recently, pondering a client was pondering a switch to Bootstrap, and you know. you know, and I think, you know, the idea is like, oh, we get all these components for free. That's true. But from a style perspective, or even like a JavaScript perspective, if you need more functionality, you now have to kind of like hack core, or you have to like add importance, you know, you have to kind of override the principal style sheet or the principal, you know, Bootstrap, you know. I think it's the same situation kind of described here. And to people can have varying degrees of success here. I'm not poo-pooing any work here, but I think Robin Rendell has a good story of trying to dig out from a Bootstrap app. And he was saying that he has like Bootstrap, and then they have the Bootstrap modifications kind of sandwiched in there. And then, you know, it's like, and now when he wants to move something or update something, he now has two systems competing, like kind of stapled together. And it's just like, it was enough to where he's like, well, I just have to patiently, you know, or dig ourselves out of this situation. And he's doing that. And I think it's going well for him, just what he shared on his blog. So, but yeah, you kind of have this like, you end up with like two systems, like the prefab solution and then all your modifications. And I'm not sure there's a good way to kind of clean this up other than, you know, kind of maybe injecting some custom classes into the HTML or something, you know? Or maybe you have to like, kind of like if it's a gnarly component and you're like, I could do this in like 10 lines, you know, maybe your crime CSS is actually like I'm going to remove this one from their thing and add our own. You have a little bit of CSS bloat, but you know, or maybe it's, whatever. I'm thinking of like, what would be like the footer on their website, just or on the theme is like just weird or not correct. So you're just like, you just copy their styles and put them in your crime CSS, and then you call it footer-v2 or something. And so then you opt out of their styles, and then you start using your styles, and maybe that works. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. There's a heck of a lot of it depends in here. And, you know, I think the moment where it, you know, the client is, you know, a high paying client and they're saying, you know, we want you to, you know, be our go-to developers on this project on call, it's going to go through lots of changes over the course of 3 years. Well, then it's time to get your system in place to help yourself on this thing. If you're the type of shop that needs to put these changes in place quick, you ship the client, you bill them, you'll never see them again. Who cares how you do it? You know, not to like make it somebody else's problem, but like the reality is you can't re-architect an entire site at a certain price point, you know?
Well, and the trade-off here is, you know, it's like, we're going to do the shortcut by buying a theme, you know?
Yeah. The price point is already low. We already know that because you're already just buying a theme and slapping it up. So,
yeah. So then now it's like, okay, if you're just doing that, then yeah, my care level would be kind of low.
But yeah.
I think like at some point, it sounds like you want to graduate on to something kind of more kind of bespoke system-y. So you should look for opportunities to do that. So.
This episode is sponsored by Jetpack from Automattic, the folks behind WordPress. Jetpack is the ultimate toolkit for WordPress. It gives you everything you need to design, secure, and grow your site in one bundle. With Jetpack, you can fully customize your site with free themes, image tools, and rich content. Increase your traffic through automatic social sharing, related content, and faster load times. And get a safer, stronger site through secure logins and protection from brute force attacks. Recently, Jetpack has been adding blocks for the new WordPress editor, so you can easily add cool things to your website, like a repeat visitor block. Automattic uses this on their job posting page, where after a certain number of repeat visits by the same IP address, they put a notice up encouraging people to apply. An ad block that allows you to insert ads from Jetpack's Word Ads program in your posts and pages. A business hours block that easily shows your business opening and closing times. A contact info block that not only makes it easy for visitors to know how to get in touch with you, it's also set up so search engines pick up the data as well. And a whole lot more, like blocks for MailChimp, slideshows, videos, and more. If you're like me and just dipping your toes into the new WordPress editor, Be sure to check out Jetpack at jetpack.com and try out the new content blocks they've added on your business or personal site. Our thanks to Jetpack for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
All right. Diego Hernandez writes in saying, I'm kind of clashing with some other team members on our coding standards. So Diego
never
says,
happens. Sorry.
I know you're the only one, bud. He says he likes using BEM, you know, and CSS. And he's usually the person kind of calling out inconsistencies and requesting that other team members make changes to their code. So it sticks to what I perceive to be our standards. I don't like doing this because I come across as nitpicky and difficult to work with, and it feels like kind of a waste of time because if no one else is calling these things out, then, you know, no one seems to understand the benefit of the standards. So, I totally get you there. I think there's some red flags, though, wouldn't you say, Diego or Dave? Dave Diego?
Yeah, Dave Diego. No, Diego, two things. You probably would not like working with me because I'm terrible. Like I do faux BEM and it's just the worst. But second, I actually would actually love to work with somebody like you who like cares about it and is just like, this is what we're doing. Cause I can fall in line and just be like, yeah, okay. If that's what we're doing, like let's, cause I don't care what it's named. Actually, I mostly care how it works and what the user interacts with, you know? So I think that's good. But I also know it's never fun to be the curmudgeon in the office, the nitpicker, you know? So I think it's about learning how to pick your battles, right? And what, or maybe you go through a process and formalize how you name stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Brad Frost. I'm sure we talked about it, but Brad Frost has this front-end developer guidelines repo. And it's basically a questionnaire, like a 25-question questionnaire. And it's just how do we write CSS, basically, or JavaScript, or how? What's our process? Or how do we do all these things? And you just document it. And then, so if somebody's like commits something that's wrong, you just paste a link to the document you guys created together and just... You can be like, hey, let's try to abide by these coding standards we already decided on. Here's a link. It's a little passive aggressive, a little dicky, but
you perceive them to be standards, but nobody's agreed to them. Like there's no standards if there's no standards. You don't just get to decide their standards and then they're your standards, you know?
Yeah.
Like standards are standards. And then if there aren't any, like, then you need to back up and be like, hey, can we implement some standards? And it sounds like that maybe won't go well because it sounds like nobody really cares. But maybe you have to put the pitch together. Like if we had standards, then the X, Y, and Z would be better somehow. And usually what's better is less bugs. Like is your team inundated by bugs? Maybe then your presentation is, hey, see, remember this bug when this happened? That could have been avoided through a better naming situation. Remember this bug? That could have been avoided through this. And I just think it will be better, you know, and, you know, developers leave and come in and now we have this set of standards and things will just be better for us. If you can make that pitch, that'd be great. If you can't make that pitch, like you're unable to do it because you don't have things to point you that are a problem, maybe there isn't a problem then. So that's tricky too. Like it's, you know, it's weird to say, hey, there shouldn't be standards, but you know, the web's a big place, you know, like if you're just this picky guy who's picking on people's commits, even though they're not really a problem, that's not good either. Like Diego, the fact that you're a Shop Talk Show listener and writing in, I'm on your side here, man. But we got to consider all the possibilities here. If, you know, it's also a problem. The person on the team who just does nitpicky commits for no reason is also a problem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that, yeah, like there's a management kind of thing, like, or even just like, is this your responsibility to like, you know, to judge code based on, you know, like were you given that authority to like enforce the style guide or the linter, you know? You know, I think that's kind of a big question. You know, maybe you're out of your lane and you know, the reason people are not hopping on board is because you don't have like the organizational authority to do that, if that makes sense. So that's something to consider. I hate to say that, but yeah, something to consider. Like, who's this clown? Bem is stupid. I'm not doing this. I've made websites for 20 years.
Bem is definitely going to fail unless it's strictly adhered to, in my experience. So what's the point of Bem if it's not sticky and whatever? Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why I've never used this, because it's never strict, you know, or it's strict and I don't really like abide by that. So anyway.
We got time for another couple here, probably.
Yeah, let's go. Micah Mills writes in, recently I had a couple of high school students approach me about how to learn web development. I want to help them and mentor them in the field, but I also don't want to reinvent the wheel and create a web dev curriculum when there's so many good options out there. I would like to point them towards a code camp or academy where they can work through some basics and I can help them on the curriculum when needed.
That sounds fair, because you don't have a lot of time, right? So you don't, like, why reinvent the wheel if you don't have to for time reasons? I feel like sometimes curriculum is reinvented not because it's not invented here syndrome or something, but more like just like I can't just pull a curriculum off the shelf and teach it because you're not familiar with it. So part of inventing curriculum is inventing something that you're familiar with. I don't think it's problematic necessarily to put a little mini curriculum together yourself, because then it matches your mental model. You're the teacher here, so you need to know what's going on. So throwing together a little mini curriculum for yourself might not be the worst idea, unless you just don't have the time or wherewithal to do that. And certainly reach for something. And there's stuff out there. You know, we've had sponsors like Treehouse. We've had sponsors like 1 Month. We've had, you know, but there's, of course, there's Khan Academy here, stuff, you know, West Boss courses, whatever else.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think the big thing is accountability. You know, like, maybe just pick something. I just found this Khan Academy HTML, CSS or whatever. You know, you just say, hey, we're using CodePen. So get a CodePen account or talk to your parents, but get a CodePen account and then get a Khan Academy account or, you know, and go through chapter one, HTML. Like, you'll have to do a little bit of research, but offload all this like curriculum to somebody else and just, or Code Academy, and be like, hey, we're going through this. I feel like it was a Rebecca Murphy thing, JQ Fundamentals. Yes, this is old. It's maybe out of date because it's all jQuery, but like, you know, like find something and go through it with them and then ask them questions about what they learned, you know, in that section. Like, make them recall the information they went through, and like, you know, with high schoolers, don't cut them slack, make them do it. Like, they're smart, they're adults. Like, you just are mostly adults, like young adults, we'd say. Like make sure they like are applying themselves. I think that's all you need to be is like a, hey, open up your computer and like learn this, like read this, go through this, and then I'm going to ask you questions about it. Like, I think that's about all the prodding you need to do, in my opinion. I don't think you need to sit with them and correct every single thing. So
I always like to give the, you know, the table stakes is my favorite talking point. You know, maybe walk them through the process of buying their own name or buying their own domain name. You know, you could probably get one for 99 cents these days, you know. And sometimes you got to invest in somebody else's life, you know, and then hook them up with that. So, you know, like, well, you better do a good job because this is going up on your personal website.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. Like, have kind of work with them, teach them some fundamentals, but then kind of be like, hey, here's the end of year project, or here's the big project. We're going to do whatever, learning for 3 months, and then we're going to do an end of year project. You make a portfolio or I don't know, your band's website or whatever, you know. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Just, we all work on websites. We work on things that are on the web. So I don't know. I feel like that's always so crucially important, you know.
Yeah.
And just get familiar with that idea that you have a URL and the things go to there.
That's a good point.
End with this little one about this, about this. It's about websites. So this question here.
Okay.
Andy Harrison writes in that he's kind of like, trying to pick a CMS, which is the biggest topic in the world. We could have a whole podcast on it practically. I love thinking about CMSs and stuff because it's just a fascinating world to me. But Andrew feels like he's in this position where he feels like WordPress is too much for what he needs. Like, just that's not what he wants to do. And but like he wants to do something. I'm not sure what it is, but it's for a franchise company. Like, imagine it's like a, I don't know, a pizza burger company with 15 locations or something. And each it's like, so there'll be some homepage surely. And then each location has a custom landing page, right? So it's like, I don't know. That's what he's in for. Static-ish, it sounds like, but extensible. And CMS sounds like a perfect, like a, it sounds like a, something that should have a CMS of some kind. And maybe like a headless thing would be cool, but he's finding headless and like, you know, build my own front end however I want to thing isn't kind of like a user-friendly enough situation to deliver to the client, maybe. So that's how he's feeling about that. And then, but if he's like, well, just use Wix or Weebly or Squarespace or whatever the heck, that's not, then why would I tell him to do that? They've come to me to build the website. I'd rather take their money than point them at some build your own website scenario, you know? So he wants this, like, wants a CMS that, like, feels like it fits that vibe.
Yeah. I mean, so I have a little experience here. Like, I've built a friend's, like, he has a trailer park called Thicket here in Austin. You could probably find the URL there just by those keywords. But I built my friend, you know, a Squarespace site, you know, like, right. Basically found some theme, modded a theme, and built the Squarespace and like for free just because I like the guy, or traded yard work because he's a landscaper as well.
Well, so it's kind of nice. Then you can hand it off to him and be like, do you need to change that copy down there in the footer? It's all you. Like, you really can do, man. This.
Don't call me. Like, because I'm too busy for that. So it actually works out. But like, I think it's working. But that said, you know, this isn't a slight, but modifications he's made on his own have not ended up so well. So I end up having to come in and like, you know, it's like, oh, hey, look, Squarespace has like a gallery feature. I can just like put all his trailers, which is his inventory, like franchise locations, but his trailers in a gallery and just spit out logos and pictures of trailers. And then I gave him a photo gallery. He was just like, oh, I didn't know I could do a photo gallery. So, and so now he has a photo gallery of photos, and that's, you know, more engaging. And all of his customers are like, oh, I saw all the photos that made me come by. So there you go. You know, like, it's kind of just like, I think don't underestimate your skills there for these, like, you know, box website, big box website things. I wouldn't underestimate your skill set there. I think you still offer value, but give them like an ability to update, you know, and then just say, hey, let's do a checkup. And in 6 months, we'll, you know, let's do this. If WordPress is overkill, I got one more for you, Chris.
Yeah, ready? What's that? I'll take it.
Have you heard of Vapid CMS?
Never heard of it.
Check it out. It's a Weight Shift, old design agency joint. They now, Scott Robin and Naz Hamid have created a Vapid. It's pretty sweet. I'll write a tutorial for CSS tricks for you. How's that sound?
Oh, how about a
marketing website in 5 minutes? You ready?
Wow.
You
ready for that? Yeah, I'm excited about that.
It's a node-based thing. It's pretty hot. And you write templates, and it generates the CMS based on your templates.
Next level. Perch did that.
Yeah.
I was thinking like, oh, there'd be a kind of a fun little excuse to use Contentful maybe, and then just like, just get all these pages as JSON and then just build on the front end however you want. And then you still have the CM, then you can invite your client into the Contentful thing, and they still have a nice editing environment to change pages and make new pages and stuff. That's what I'm focused on here, is this idea of you don't want to be called when all they want to do is they're opening a new location in Dayton, Ohio. They should just be able to do that. So, and another one I would think is like, build the site with 11D or something. Build it, use a static site generator thing where you can just build the homepage however you want to, and then have a locations folder, but the locations are dynamic in a way that they just require a new markdown file to exist, like DaytonOhio.md. And so with any kind of static site generator, that plus Netlify CMS or Forestry is pretty sweet because it's like a CMS on top of your static files. So if you need an, you don't have to teach a client, hey, go into the GitHub repo, make a new file in this directory, call it this name, and then save a, do a pull request to the repository. But it lets you work in a static site generator situation, but there's a CMS layer on top of it, which mm-hmm. has all the nice UI that has, you know, drop down menus and header fields. And so they can still like create the content. But when they hit save, what happens behind the scenes is a markdown file gets created. It gets pushed to the repo. The Netlify build gets built, et cetera, you know, which is pretty rad.
No, nope. Netlify CMS is kind of on my like stuff to check out list. So just because, yeah, you want a static site, but then you want just a little bit of, hey, you edit it. That's what you want.
Yeah. I mean, I use it on my CSS Tricks conferences site because if there's a new conference, somebody emails me and is like, because I'll accept PRs for new conferences, no problem, a little 11D site. But some people are like, I don't want to, you know, do a PR. I don't know how. I just run this conference, you know, like, can you just put it on here for me? Well, sometimes I don't really feel like pulling my repo and adding the file. And like I'm perfectly capable of doing that. That's how I built the site. But sometimes it's nice to open a new browser tab, fill out some form fields and hit save and have it be live on the site. That's what a CMS is. I like CMSs. And so that's what Netlify CSS is for. It's just, it's one file you put on your site, Dave. It's incredible. It's a CMS that's a file. It's two files because it's an index and there's a CSS file that goes with it. But it, or maybe there even isn't. No, there's not because it pulls it off a CDN because who cares, you know? The file is a config file that tells the CMS how to behave. This is what my content looks like. But otherwise, it's a little SPA. It's one file. And you teach it. Yeah, it's incredible. You teach it like, oh, the authorize, you know, through Netlify auth or whatever. And that's a little one, that's a one-off thing too. So there's auth, you click and you log in and then it gives you this nice little UI based on your config of what, how you've described your content to work. I think it's freaking incredible. Anyway, and I could invite a client into that easily. You just say, oh, this client has access to. What it doesn't do, which is coming, I think, really soon, is like that anybody could log in and do it. But then it becomes the PR that you then have to approve. I think that would be nice to totally open it to the community. Do you want to add a new piece of content to this site? Sure. Just authorize here, fill it out, click the save button. Great. Now your thing is a draft and I can, as an admin, then approve it. I think that's like coming.
No, that'd be cool. That's cool.
Oh, that was a lot of words. We should probably wrap up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Thank you, dear listener, for sending in your questions. Oh, we want more questions. Thank you. We really appreciate it. And thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.